Hello and welcome back to the Catch the Blitz show, season 3, episode 3. I'm Thomas Parker, and as always, joined by Christian Catanacci. Cat, week 1 is officially in the books. How are you doing today, sir?
You should have said a very happy Christian Catanacci, because that's exactly what I am after watching that Cowboy slaughter fest, because that was the farthest thing from a game. But week 1 is almost behind us. We're actually recording this just before the Monday Night Football game, which is expected to be a good one. I think it's going to be a good one. For those that listened to the show last week, knows that my New York Football Jets are going to take the W tonight, because I already saw the script. Roger Goodell sent it to us earlier. But week 1 is behind us. And I mean, like you mentioned before, I think the only week better than week 1 is Super Bowl week.
I was going to say, I love week 1. We talked about it on last week's show. And I was going to say, I don't want to talk about last week's show because of my horrible, horrible predictions. But I'm going to have a chance to redeem myself today. But yeah, week 1 is great because we're starving for football all offseason, right? We go months and months. I mean, we watch third stringers in training camp. That's how badly we all miss the NFL. But then week 1 ends, almost ends. We do have a Monday night game tonight. But week 1 ends, and we're left with this Monday morning. The overreactions are just out of control because we have such a small sample size, and we think that what we saw yesterday is going to be the same thing every single week. We think guys like Tyreek Hill are going to have 200 receiving yards every week. We think guys like DeAndre Swift are going to finish the NFL season with only 17 carries because, you know, that's how little he was used for the Eagles. And I just want to harp on the point that it is just one game, and we have 17 weeks of action to still go. So if your team was terrible yesterday, if your team was great yesterday, if your fantasy team, like myself, scored 40 points yesterday, relax.
You gotta give them a little pep talk, though.
Yeah, you gotta coach your players.
Yeah, you gotta coach.
But relax. It is a long, long journey, and it's a grind, the NFL season. And we're gonna see some teams improve so much. Some players see their roles improve. But yes, week 1 is great, but I just wanted to come into today's show, not to push agendas or anything, because we are going to play some fun games where we decide whether if what we saw is going to be true for the rest of the season or not. But I just wanted to come in immediately out of the gate and just emphasize that point. Let's all push the pause button with some of these takeaways.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't said it any better. I couldn't have said it any better myself, Pac, to be honest. It's the week of overreactions, right? I mean, that's sort of every week in the NFL, but more so in week 1. But yeah, I think we should just go right into it. I mean, like we said, week 1 is pretty much behind us. And Thomas and I have harped on a lot of things over the offseason, including some good takes, some bad takes. And again, we're not sort of throwing in the towel or anything here, but it's good to look on what we said. And I mean, after the first week, it's like, okay, where do we stand here? So I mean, we're just going to go through a little things here and talk about what we were right about, what we were wrong about, and what we still don't know. Because like Pac mentioned, there are still a whopping 16 more games that your team, well, if you're watching this as a Bills and Jets fan, then 17 more games for you. But for the most part, you pretty much got 96% of your season still left to go, right? So yeah, Pac, let's start with you. What do you think so far, at least? What were you wrong about?
What was I wrong
about? A lot, besides saying a lot of things, like, you know.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, if I had a dime for every time I had to take that age poorly on this show, I'd be, I could retire, I'll say that. It's tough to say. I was definitively wrong about them, but I was very, very surprised by the Pittsburgh Steelers offense yesterday. And I read a very, very alarming stat about Matt Canada and the direction of this team under him and how they've performed and how many points they've scored in games since he's sort of taken over that offensive coordinator role. And it is frightening. You have a young quarterback in Kenny Pickett, year 2. You hear all the right things in the offseason. The preseason is perfect. It seemed like every time he came out there, it was 7 for 7, 80 yards, and a great, great touchdown drive. The connection with George Pickens, everything. I really, really got myself psyched up for this team. Now, on the defensive side of the ball, early, yeah, Brock Purdy was dominating them, but it's tough to play defense when your offense just can't get anything going. You're always on the field. You're tired. The defense, I am still in on. TJ Watt had 3 sacks yesterday. Great, great unit. The offense, though, I will say early on, I'm very concerned. So for my where I was wrong, it was on that the Pittsburgh Steelers were going to come out firing and put the 49ers on their heels, and that did absolutely not happen.
Yeah, completely opposite, to be honest. What was I wrong about? I mean, this one's still a little bit up in the air, but if we're talking strictly week one, I was definitely wrong about the LA Rams. And this is a team that I thought would be no good. I thought that they were going to go into Seattle and they were going to get a beatdown. And, I mean, you want to talk about Matthew Stafford and just the team as a whole. For a team that got rid of some extremely key pieces this year, and no Cooper Kupp, got rid of Jalen Ramsey. Those are two of your star players. Not having those guys and going into Seattle, which is already an extremely hostile environment, and winning in comfortable fashion too, not just, you know, by a field goal or whatever. They had their way for majority of the game. To do that in the first week, I think it almost is a statement. I don't know if I'm really ready to buy in like the Rams or this contender that they were 2 years ago, but I think they definitely are going to be a little bit better than myself, at least, I expected them to be. So yeah, where was I wrong? I think I can comfortably say, or confidently say, so far at least, that the LA Rams, at least in the week one, they proved me right. They proved me wrong, sorry.
I think I talked about it in maybe one of our offseason shows, how the Rams were maybe the hardest team to predict.
Yes.
Because you have an elite head coach, you have someone who, when healthy, can be an elite quarterback, and then the rest of the roster seemed like question marks, where players were, you know, a couple years ago, we haven't heard of them, or they're just brand new in the league, and it's like, how do we really gauge this team? A lot of people thought they were going to be terrible. I kind of just wanted to veer away completely from committing myself with this Rams team, and I still don't know how to predict them going forward, but it was a very, very encouraging week one performance. But into now, where we were right. I mean, your Cowboys put up 40 points last night.
I'm not even mentioning those Cowboys. Okay. I'm not even mentioning them. I'm actually going to piggyback what you said about where you were wrong. I was right. Even though I listened to the outside noise about the Steelers last week, I've been harping all offseason about these Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, I want to start at the quarterback position. We're talking about Kenny Pickett here. Nothing against Kenny Pickett, but on the field, it's a below average quarterback at best, at best. And if we're talking about their counterparts, and I know the Cincinnati Bengals just made an absolute mockery, which I'm not going to overreact about because look what Joe Burrow did last year. For those that don't remember or want to be reminded, Mr. 5 interceptions against Washington Commanders. So I'm not going to worry too much about what the Bengals did. But if we're talking about their division counterparts here, I think that the Pittsburgh Steelers are the worst team in this division. And I'm not even sure it's really close. I think the Browns are better. I would take the Ravens. And say what you want about Joe Burrow and the Bengals, but they're playing tomorrow. I'm taking the Bengals by a touchdown at least. I don't want to get too cocky here because, again, there's still 16 weeks left. But as of right now, my Steelers take seems to be aging pretty well because, again, if they're a team that a lot of people expect them to take this jump and be a, I don't want to say Super Bowl contender, but a playoff contender team, you're looking at the gap right there by between a good team in San Francisco and a below average team in Pittsburgh, which I think that's exactly what they are at the moment.
Okay. I mean, I have hope for the Steelers still a little bit because of their defense. Am I concerned about the firepower that they have? Am I concerned about the quarterback being able to elevate his team? I mean, the O-line, I feel like for years we've been saying like the O-line needs to be fixed. They're improving it. They're addressing it. Still has not looked better at all. I don't know. The Steelers are a very, very tough team to read at the moment for me. Where I was right, and this is a guy I've been singing his praises for years, call it a homer pick if you will, but each time a new challenge is thrown at him, each time a naysayer has some new hot take about why he can't be that guy, why he's not a franchise quarterback, whenever the goalposts continue to move, Tua Tagovailoa continues to deliver in the clutch for the Miami Dolphins. How many lead changes were there yesterday? He threw a pick. You know, there were some fumbling issues. Every single time there was adversity, he came back and he answered with big time plays down the stretch. I don't even care about the numbers because at this point, like, I'm just get used to it, Dolphins fans. I'll say that about these big time numbers because this guy is in every sense a franchise quarterback. And yeah, you might say, oh, it's easy to say now, but I was right about this years ago. And that is my where I was right for week one. Tua is him. And he's going to take the Dolphins places this year.
There's nothing like Pot going off in his good old Tua Tagovailoa hype train. But he did look good, man. He did look good. And if I was a Miami Dolphins fan, which I'm thankfully not, I would be very encouraged with what I saw. Even though, you know what? They did not lead for a single second in that game. No, they didn't take a single offensive snap with the lead.
We led. We had the last single offensive snap.
They didn't take a single offensive snap with the lead.
That's right, because we went up. I think we went up, I don't want to say the wrong number, maybe 17-14, and then quickly the Chargers answered, and then I think we were up at halftime too, and the Chargers scored right away. The defense was terrible.
Yeah.
The defense was really bad. And I just want to say a quick thing about Justin Herbert, because everyone is making this game to be like Tua versus Herbert, and they're putting Tua's numbers up against Herbert's numbers, and I just think that has to completely stop right there. Justin Herbert is a phenomenal quarterback. And it's not his fault that the Miami run defense was terrible and couldn't stop Austin Eckler.
Yeah.
Like
Joshua Kelly, too.
Yeah,
was,
Joshua
had Kelly. Had himself a day.
So let's all put that to bed, the Herbert slander, because he is, in every sense, a great quarterback. And the two, they have very different play styles. The offenses are completely different. But it was a great game and an early candidate for game of the year, excuse me. But the one conclusion where I was right is that Tua Tagovailoa is incredible. What are we going to do? What we still don't know. Okay, I like that.
I mean, I'm going to start here, and this is sort of on the Cowboys topic, because it's still, I mean, that was such a weird game where you almost came out of it like, it's like, okay, what was that game even? Like, what even was that game, right? Like, there was so much going on, and so when it comes to what I still don't know is it the Giants? Are the Giants just really bad, or, like, are the Cowboys, could they be, like, literally, like, actually Super Bowl contenders? Because, like, every single year, the Cowboys are a good team, but, like, they always have, like, last year, the Cowboys were good, but they had some wide open holes. Like, you're talking about Noah Brown was their second receiver. Now they got Brandon Cooks. Last year they had really no outside corner depth outside of Trayvon Diggs. They went there and got Stephon Gilmore. So, like, did the Cowboys improve that much? And last year they were a good team. And I mean, sure, the Giants got absolutely dismantled on Sunday Night Football, but they did get better too. Like, this is a team that improved, right? They had Darren Waller. They had Deontay Banks. Their offensive line improved. Jalin Hyatt with speed. And second year Brian Daboll. Saquon Barkley healthy. Like, this is a team that a lot of people expected to sort of continue what they built last year. And I don't know if that sort of, if they're taking a step back or this Cowboy team is just really, really good. So, I mean, I don't know yet because, quite frankly, everyone knows the Cowboys defense is fantastic. The Cowboys offense is very good too, but the Cowboys offense simply didn't even play. Like, they didn't have to do anything. The game was 14-0 before Dak even took a snap under center. So for me, I don't know yet what the sort of two sides of this game is. Like, is it either the Giants are bad or the Cowboys are very good? I mean, I hope it's the latter, but again, we're going to find out eventually what the truth is behind this, because this was one of those weird games where, I mean, as much as I want to say I saw it coming, I did not see 40-0.
Yeah. And I don't know if the score, I don't think the Cowboys are 40-0 better than the Giants, but my takeaway from the game is that the Cowboys look really good. And I think they're going to be an awesome team this season. And that didn't surprise me or anything, but I also thought that the Giants were just very unprepared, sloppy. I don't know. It's a weird situation. When you pay a quarterback and you pay a running back, these should be two franchise pieces. You start the game at home in primetime. It is so humiliating to lose 40-0. Like, the year the Dolphins were tanking for Tua, they were losing by that much. And this is a Giants team that made the playoffs. They won a playoff game last year. They should have aspirations to win a division based on the trajectory that they hope this roster is growing. So a very, very disappointing game. But yeah, you leave with more questions than answers for sure about the future of this New York Giants team and even how good the Cowboys are from it. So I like that take from you. What we still don't know from me, and they were my most intriguing team to start the year, and this is the Atlanta Falcons. And their game went as I expected, and I don't think that's a good thing because it is exactly what I feared. This is an offense that has invested premium draft capital into three key weapons: Drake London, Kyle Pitts, and Bijan Robinson. Drake London and Kyle Pitts are pretty much absent from this offense. What is the scheme? What is the direction? Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot, why did you pay such a high price for these players if you're not going to get the most out of them? This is a team with what I think can be a very, very good defense. It has a phenomenal offensive line, especially in the run game. They have the chance to, I think, compete in a pretty wide open NFC, and all of this talent on the offense side of the ball is going to be wasted. So what I still don't know is how far can this Falcons team go? Because if they continue to play like this offensively, yes, they can run you into the ground, but that's not going to work every single week, especially when you play against some high power teams that are going to score regardless of how your defense is. So I still have a ton of questions and a ton of intrigue with the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, I mean, like, they are such a weird team because I picked them to win this division, and that's not saying much. I think the division winner is going to be a game maybe under 500 at best. Mm-hmm. But from an offensive standpoint, and even just this past week, like, you invested this high pick on Bijan Robinson, and it's like they didn't even fully unleash him. Like,
well,
they,
I'm okay with that. He's a running back. He's a
rookie. Like, yes, that is fine.
Everyone complaining about Jahmyr Gibbs Thursday night was driving me crazy. Like, it's his first NFL game.
Yeah, I know. It's not fantasy football. Like, they're not just going to, like, play the guy because...
And Tyler Allgeier is a good running back.
Yes.
And I think at their best, the Falcons are going to use both heavily.
Yes, which is smart. But yeah, you look at Kyle Pitts. Like, well, I think he had three targets, right? Like, I mean, Drake London. Again, those are two top 10 picks. We're talking about elite... You put in top assets and invested in these two guys, and to not use them, or I don't want to say not use them, because, you know, game plans sort of flip on their head, and it's hard to, like, consider, you know what I mean? It varies game to game, I should say. Like, it's impossible to get Kyle Pitts 12 touches every single game because he's a tight end, different. But it looks like they don't even scheme up anything for them. That's what I don't get. It's like, okay, you have these guys, so at least have some plays that are directed to go at them. Utilize his talents. Heck, put him up. You're talking about Kyle Pitts as one of the most freakish athletes that has ever come out of college football. To play that guy at tight end, you're telling me you can't find a mismatch with a linebacker? Like,
I'm so, so glad you brought that up, because if we rewind to 2021, that draft season, what was being said about Kyle Pitts? Ultimate mismatch, matchup nightmare. The word unicorn was being tossed around so freely. Freak athlete. There should be no opponent that matches up against Kyle Pitts where you say, oh, you know what? Maybe this isn't a Kyle Pitts game. Maybe we should, you know, go away from using him. This is your guy. The offense should be built around Kyle Pitts, like Miami builds their offense around Tyreek Hill, like the Vikings build their offense around Justin Jefferson. That is the prospect that we were told was coming into this Falcons team, and it has been completely absent. Yeah, you know what? You get a win against a rookie quarterback in week one. Your defense looked great at home, but you're going to play some tough road games where your offense is going to need to step up. And honestly, I have my doubts and I have my questions on whether this Falcons offense can continue to operate like this.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me not to agree, to be honest. I think they slide in perfectly to, like, what we still don't know, because there's such an unknown, because they have the potential, but for some reason they're just not, it feels like they're not putting the best game plan forward, which is truly a head scratcher, because we're just two dudes that are just sitting here watching the game on TV, and we're like, even we could tell that, like, okay, heck, I've never called a football game in my life.
Yeah.
But if I got a guy like that, I'm pretty sure that I'd try to get him the ball at least, or come up with something. I mean, I've done it on Madden a couple times. I know how to option some hot routes and throw a slant and take it to the house. I'm not sure if that's has anything to do with it, but you get the point. The fact of the matter is, I don't even think the Falcons know what they have in Kyle Pitts, which is weird because they invested the top five pick on him, which is truly a head scratcher. But yeah, that just, I mean, what we were wrong about, what we were right about, what we still don't know. Obviously, it's just week one, like we mentioned maybe 500 times already. But that was a good little exercise to start the show. And we're going to go into another thing. As we were planning the show, I thought that this would be such a cool idea. And I think Pac agreed because we're clearly doing it right now, or we're about to do it. Buy or sell. So we're going to, I mean, everyone again, week one, the king, the lead when it comes to overreactions. It's like, you got a millions and millions of people watching these games, and they've been waiting 7 months for this, and you already know that it's just one game, but people are going to treat it like it's the end of the world. So we're going to go through some takes or some reactions of the weekend, and we're going to say, are we buying it, are we selling it, or are we holding it for the rest of the season?
All right, let's get right into it. We will start off, we'll go to the NFC, a team that I think both of us were pretty optimistic for going into the year. The Green Bay Packers, Jordan Love, he was the first quarterback to throw three touchdowns this season. He was one of only three to do that this week. Can the Packers contend with Jordan Love? Are you buying that? Are you selling that? Are you holding on?
I think this is a perfect hold for me. Like if I mean, obviously, I loved what I saw from Jordan Love. I thought it was, I mean, I thought he played remarkable for everything, just everything that's gone on throughout this whole situation from ever since he was drafted into the league and up until this point. He's really done nothing except for put his head down and just go to work. And I think you're seeing that pay off. He looks like he could be the quarterback of the future. And for that reason, I think I'm going to hold it. Because if he is anything like he showed on Sunday, this is that. I mean, a quarterback like that, if you can play, you're talking any, again, bottom line is if you can get top 13 to 14 quarterback play out of your guy, I think you should be able to contend on a week in, week out basis. So with that being said, I think I'm probably in the hold section, but I'm probably almost buying it. I'm like in between.
I think I'm going to hold as well. I don't think he is going to do what he did yesterday every week. If you look at his sort of
efficiency, also not fair. It's also not fair to expect because it is his rookie year, right?
It is technically, yes, his rookie year. I think he has benefited from having some time to rest and learn from Rodgers, but I'm not expecting him to do that every week, nor do I think it is going to be that smooth every week. He played a defense that last year was near the bottom of the league, but to win a divisional game on the road, like, he genuinely really, really impressed me yesterday, and if I'm a Packers fan, I'd be ecstatic with his progression. I'm going to hold, though, because I think it is a little too soon to be like, okay, I'm all in on Jordan Love. I think I would buy long-term, though. Yeah. I will say that.
I'm on board.
I don't think he is going to be contending right away or continuing to perform at this high level. There are going to be some trials and tribulations that he undergoes. But long-term, I am into the idea of Jordan Love taking this franchise places. Next up, we'll talk Thursday Nighter. Patrick Mahomes' weapons in Kansas City are a massive concern. Buy, sell, or hold.
I know for those that are familiar with my takes on this podcast, I know I harp on the fact that you just need weapons. In today's NFL, you absolutely need weapons. With that being said, Patrick Mahomes has a very good one. He just wasn't playing on Thursday. So I'm not too worried yet about...
So you're selling on this?
Yeah, I'm selling. Okay. I'm selling. I think they're going to be fine. I mean, they were missing Travis Kelce. You can figure out Kadarius Toney. He's an NFL receiver. He's not going to forget how to catch every single week. Hopefully not. I mean, but it's only, again, it was a tough first game. I'm not going to buy it too much. I still think the Chiefs are contenders. They still have the best quarterback in the world. Their tight end who's friggin' awesome at football, just wasn't playing on Thursday. If he's there, the game's different. They probably win. So yeah, I'm going to sell it. I'm not worried about Mahomes, because if there's one guy that can overcome a lackluster receiving core, it's Patrick Mahomes.
I'm in a very tough place on this one because I don't think Kadarius Toney's going to drop every pass that's thrown his way. Like, you cannot play worse than Kadarius Toney did last Thursday. So I believe in his future in this offense. But what I watched was just unwatchable. But at the same time, I'm also like, yeah, I could see Mahomes winning the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah.
But if that continues to be a problem every week, like, I don't want to hold again. You know, I'm going to buy it. I mean, I think a world exists where I can be confident in the Chiefs, but still be worried about their weapons. Because if you look at their offense, sorry, if you look at their roster, that is probably one of the weaknesses. Even with Travis Kelce, he does not have a great supporting cast. The Super Bowl was a lot of big plays, a lot of Mahomes magic, a lot of great schemes that just, quite frankly, fooled the Eagles. Andrew Smith-Schuster was there, who was a little bit more reliable. I think Rashee Rice will get better as the year goes on. But for now, I'm still worried about these weapons. I'm going to buy. We'll go to the next one. Another NFC quarterback. Justin Fields is not the guy for the Chicago Bears. Buy, sell, or hold.
I'm going to sell this one too, to be honest. I just feel like it's a little harsh. Look, is Justin Fields going to be Patrick Mahomes, or is that's obviously unrealistic. Is he going to be Josh Allen? No, right? He's not going to ever be Josh Allen. I don't think that's his game. I don't think he's going to take some crazy jump to become this elite quarterback. But can you make it work with a guy like that has his skill set? Yes, I still believe that. Despite their poor showing on Sunday, I think that Justin Fields still has room to grow, and I think he will grow and ultimately become that franchise quarterback for the Bears. Now, will he ever be an elite quarterback? I don't think so. So, I mean, if the Bears want an elite guy, then I guess he's not the guy for the future. But I think that they are going to buy into this guy because he does have such a rare skill set, and such a, I don't want to say perfect, he's got a very favorable mold for like a modern day quarterback. And I think that, I mean, you're not really going to part ways with that after 2 or 3 years, whatever it's been, just because of one game or a stretch of games. I think he's got potential to be that guy. So I'm going to sell it a little bit because I'm still high on Justin Fields. Maybe I'm not as high as I once was, but I still think he's got capability to be a franchise guy.
I'm selling as well. Yeah, the numbers are alarming. The fact that he's 5-21 as a starter or whatever the record is, that is obviously not great and not what you want from a quarterback that you take high in the first round. But when I look at the case of Justin Fields and I examine the athleticism, all the tools that he has, all the capabilities that you can build an effective offense with this guy, to me, the number one problem is coaching. And Matt Eberflus, nothing against him. He seems like he can be a good guy to lead a group. But if we look at the trends of the modern-day NFL, these young, offensive-minded, offensive-minded is everything. And I think if you paired Justin Fields with a guy like Matt LaFleur or Kyle Shanahan or Mike McDaniel, you'd probably get a different product out of him. So for that, I'm going to sell. I still believe in Justin Fields in the Chicago Bears offense.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail right on the head there, Pac. I mean, it's just too, it feels a little bit too premature. I know there's been quite, 26 games is no small sample size. But let's move on to another NFC quarterback in Brock Purdy. Was 2022 Brock Purdy, was it not a fluke? Is he really that guy?
I'm buying this, man. I loved what I saw from Brock Purdy last year. I thought he does all the right things. Yeah, like you mentioned Justin Fields never being Josh Allen. Brock Purdy's never going to be Josh Allen. He doesn't have a big arm. He's not overly athletic, but man, is he a great decision maker. He is accurate, and he can lead a team with, you talked about weapons, you talked about coaching. They put him in favorable positions. Brock Purdy is the guy to lead this 49ers team places, and I don't think what we saw in 2022 was a fluke. I don't think what we saw yesterday was a fluke. You don't ask him to do a lot, and he'll give you everything you need and more. I love Brock Purdy.
Yeah, I think I'm going to buy here too. And this is coming from a guy that was not necessarily the biggest Brock Purdy guy because, again, I think it was unfair to sort of put these expectations on a guy to come in and be this franchise guy. But, again, is he ever going to be a top 10 quarterback? Probably not. Is he ever going to be a top 15 quarterback? Heck, you don't know. But you don't need to in that offense. Like, you don't really, all you got to do is just be good decision maker, like Pac mentioned, and just not turn the ball over, right? do the right things, make the right reads, and get the ball into your playmaker's hands. And that's exactly what Kyle Shanahan set him up for. And the position that he's in, obviously he benefited greatly, and he's in one of the best situations in the league. But you can't take that away from the job that he has done in such a short span, from being drafted in literally the last pick of the draft. He's not a fluke. I'm buying it too, Pac. I'm buying it too. Brock Purdy ain't no fluke. He might be that guy for those 49ers.
The way I see Brock Purdy, he is like a reduced version of Kirk Cousins and Derek Carr. And when I say that, I mean in the good and in the bad. Because yes. I don't think he has the high upside that sometimes Carr and Cousins deliver with big plays or with a big arm or with a big-time throw. But he also doesn't have the sort of... Because with Derek Carr and with Kirk Cousins, it can get ugly, and it can get ugly real fast. And so far, Brock Purdy has not showed us that side of his game, and that makes me just really, really fall in love with him and what the 49ers offense continue to do. We've got two left. One is the Giants made a mistake paying Daniel Jones, buy, sell, or hold.
I'm buying this too. I think, again, is Daniel Jones okay? Like, is he an average quarterback? Is he a franchise quarterback? I think he is, but is he a $40 million quarterback? There's no way. And say what you want about the market and what quarterbacks go for, and I get that. There are certain quarterbacks where you said forget the market because you can't get better than him. I genuinely think that if they just tried, you could upgrade Daniel Jones. In that system, I do strongly believe that. And I harped on it when the contract went through on this podcast, and I will stick by that. I'm going to buy that all day. I think the Giants made a mistake paying Daniel Jones. I do. I truly do.
Yeah, I think I'm going to hold here. I'm not going to be, I don't want to say as harsh, because I've never been a Daniel Jones guy. I've never been a huge believer in him. But I did say last year, and this is the unfortunate reality of what the NFL has been, and I think the Giants... we're sort of backed into a corner in a very difficult position. But as soon as a quarterback shows you he can take you to the playoffs, even if that quarterback isn't worth that price tag, these guys are just set in the market. And I can make a whole episode of a podcast on how Kyler Murray and Deshaun Watson wrecked everything for every NFL quarterback, and how nobody should have ever leapfrogged Mahomes for at least 5 years after he signed that contract. Now we got guys like Joe Burrow making $10 million a year more than Patrick Mahomes. And when you look at that and you give Daniel Jones $40 million, it's like, he took us to the playoffs. You know, we can win with him. I guess that's sort of worth it. Doesn't have great weapons, but also the fact that his division record is just so, so poor. And I know he's got some tough matchups in there, but... it's just a little bit concerning about the ceiling of this Giants team. I'm going to hold for now because I don't want to be too harsh on the contract, because it's the reality of the NFL.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think finding someone else, you're just in a nightmare of starting over. And we watched three rookie quarterbacks do what rookie quarterbacks do yesterday. And that's not play great, because rookie quarterbacks are terrible. Yeah, I've said that before.
It's hard to be a rookie quarterback.
It's the hardest thing in sports, being a rookie quarterback in the NFL. I'm going to hold.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it is a little bit harsh to put this whole loss on Daniel Jones, because if you just watch the game, like, he was a sitting duck out there, right? Like, his offensive line was doing him no favors. He had some pretty solid plays. My reasoning as to why I'm buying this take is, it just, like, the whole point, if you're building a roster, it's to project, but also, like, be reasonable within the means of what you're doing day to day. And you watch Daniel Jones and you'd be like, okay, he's solid, but like, has he ever shown that he could be a guy that, even if you need him one every 20 games to take over a game and play his absolute heart out and keep you in that game, even if he falls short, is he able to like carry your team? I'm not expecting you should never, never, never expect your quarterback to carry you every single week by any means. But in the event that the game comes down to it, has Daniel Jones showed you anything?
Yeah.
Right? That's sort of where I am with paying quarterbacks. Like, I get it. Believe me, if there's anyone that understands the quarterback market, I've been arguing this since Dak got paid 3 years ago or whatever it was. I just think it's, I think, again, the whole quarterback situation is just, it's so crazy what the market has become. And I will take it a step further. Obviously, you don't want to get too sidetracked, but I think the contract that ruined it the most was Derek Carr's.
Yeah, that was
years back when he was making. I think it was $26.5 million. That's what he got paid, which was like huge money, just 5 years ago or 6 years ago, whatever it was. But yeah, the quarterback situation, the whole market is just an absolute joke. I'm gonna stick by it. I think I'm gonna buy. I'm buying it because I don't think Daniel Jones is a guy that could necessarily put the team on his back. Again, I hate like putting that expectation on a quarterback because it's not fair. But I don't know. When I watch Daniel Jones, I'm like, whatever. Like, I'd be fine rolling my dice and trying to find an upgrade, right? Instead of paying this guy $40 million.
I get it. Daniel Jones is not a guy where you're like, man, there's 30 seconds left on the clock. Like, they got Daniel Jones on the other sideline. Like, we're scared that he's going to march down the field and win us this game. Or you don't say, like, oh, we got Daniel Jones and the Giants coming to town this weekend. Like, that's a big matchup. It's just not like that. Yeah. He doesn't invoke that kind of feeling amongst the league. But it is what it is. That's how it is with the quarterback market. We'll end off with one more. Tua is the front runner for MVP. Buy, sell, or hold.
I know what you're doing here.
No, I'm not buying this. I'm going to hold it.
You got to hold it.
I love Tua. I think he's going to have a phenomenal season. But to call him the front runner of MVP after week one,
that's what the odds are saying.
Let's just hold our horses.
Plus 700.
Because the odds take advantage of people who don't know how to react after seeing 1 week of football. I think Tua is going to have a potentially not a record-setting Miami Dolphins season because we've had a guy like Dan Marino there. But a season that rivals seasons of Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert and maybe what Jalen Hurts did last year. But I don't want to sit here and say, like, he's the front runner. He's in an MVP. Let's see him do it more often.
Yeah, I think hold. I'm going to hold here as well.
He's not going to throw 460 yards every week. Let's just all accept that.
I mean, again, you're not going to play in games like this, right? Every game script is different. So I think it's unfair to expect him to continue on this pace, right? Because if he was, I mean, what? Tyreek Hill would probably get 3,000.
Yeah, he would be on pace for 3,000 yards.
3,000 yards,
I'd pick him to do 2,000 this year, but that is even very, very ambitious. But that is buy, sell, hold. And who knows, maybe this can even be a segment that we can take going forward.
That was fun.
Because this was pretty enjoyable. But with that, we will pivot to week two. And we did the locks last week. They went horribly for me. You're still sort of holding your breath, but you could be staring down 0-2 as well. But before we get into the locks, we will get right into Start Sits Powered by Did It, a segment that I think went much better because our advice was much better than the locks last week. Let's try to keep it rolling. And don't forget, this segment is sponsored by our friends over at Did It. If you are looking for real, authentic, personalized fantasy advice, download the app today, chat with one of their experts. You will not regret it. These guys know what they're doing in the fantasy space. So with that, Kat, who is your first start of week two?
I'm going to roll with Anthony Richardson.
Wow, okay.
I loved what I saw from Anthony Richardson, and it was exactly what I expected him to be. I think that he's just such a special athlete and is such a special talent with the ball in his hands that the Colts are going to make it their game plan to get this guy involved, seriously involved, using his legs, using his arm. And I think you saw that on display. In his first ever NFL start against a good Jacksonville team, he had like over 20 fantasy points. So I'm going to roll this guy. I'm probably going to roll him until he proves to me that he shouldn't be rolled out. I think he's that special of a talent. And from a fantasy perspective, we saw what Jalen Hurts did last year. And I don't want to say it was all because of his legs, because it was not. But if he could even just be what Jalen Hurts was with his legs, and I think he's a better athlete than Jalen Hurts, he could be a serious fantasy producer week in, week out. So I'm going to roll with Anthony Richardson as my must start this week.
I think the rookies are going to take over in this segment because for my must start in week two, I'm going with Zay Flowers. In camp, we heard about how Lamar Jackson was calling him joystick because he's so shifty, and that was on full display in week one. His target share was amazing. They used him in the run game. He just looked like a very, very special weapon that is going to carry this Ravens offense. And let's be honest, I do think outside of Lamar, this is an offense that is in need of a game breaker, someone with explosive speed and special athletic abilities. And I think Zay Flowers is that guy. Make sure he's in your lineup because he's going to continue to be the favorite target in this offense. He's going to continue to produce. Zay Flowers, my must start for week two.
I'm a big Zay Flowers guy. Big Zay Flowers guy. So let's move into sits. My must sit for the week, which is going to maybe come as a shock to some people, but I'm going to go with Tyler Allgeier. The reason why I say this is I don't expect him to do what he did last week, and I know people are going to be tempted because I'm sure 90% of people that had Tyler Allgeier last year, unless you're playing in a 14-man league, probably had him on the bench, right? Because there are better options. And I genuinely think that despite him finding the end zone two times and touching the ball as much as Bijan Robinson did, I don't think that his role is going to be as prolific as it was in the first week. I think you're going to eventually see Bijan Robinson start to take over. Obviously, they're going to still use Tyler Allgeier, but the opportunity, which is all fantasy really is opportunity and volume, is just going to slowly start to fall back just a little bit. So I'm not going to be rolling out Tyler Allgeier next week. I don't think you should be either. I think you should just sort of wait. And if you have an injury, that's when you roll him in. But I would not be counting on this guy next week to be a producer that he was in week one.
I do think Allgeier is going to continue to find a role in the offense. He also out-touched Bijan in the red zone. But you are going to see Bijan start to elevate himself. Allgeier also doesn't have the big play ability that Bijan does. He also doesn't get the volume in the passing game that he does. So at that point, you are pretty much relying on touchdowns. And I think it's going to be tough to expect this, you know, Desmond Ridder-led offense to continue to march this Falcons team into the red zone so that Allgeier can get as many opportunities as he did last week. But you know what? I think he does still have some value, but a start is kind of bold. But I'm into keeping Allgeier on your roster or even targeting him. My sit for the week, this is a team that I had high hopes for last week. They did not deliver, the Washington Commanders, and specifically Terry McLaurin. He's going up against the Broncos. Patrick Surtain is going to be a fantasy nightmare this year. He had his way with Davante Adams. Adams is a guy that consistently puts up, you know, 15, 20 fantasy points. That did not happen last week. You go, you know, Terry McLaurin, not as good of a receiver, not as tough of a cover. Couple that with Sam Howell, who I think really, really struggled against an Arizona Cardinals team last week. I'm not buying what I'm seeing with this Commanders offense yet. I would sit Terry McLaurin, and I would kind of be worried about the future that he has because Curtis Samuel had more volume. Jahan Dotson was more of a feature in this offense. And the connection between Howell and Terry, who knows how it's going to sort of play out. So I'd sit Terry McLaurin this week. Those are our stardom, sit-em, powered by Did It. Make sure to go download Did It on the App Store and reach out to them for all the fantasy advice you need. It's personal, it's custom, it's tailored to you, and it will help you succeed in your leagues this year.
Yeah, man, like Pac said, Did It. Those guys are very good at what they do. It's one-on-one personal fantasy advice. I've never seen anything like it. I sure used it to my advantage, and I mean, not to brag or anything, but I didn't actually suffer a fantasy loss this week. So who knows?
Wow. You know? 6-0 in your six leagues? That's
impressive. I think I'm in more leagues. I think I'm in seven leagues. I know I said six last week. I had six drafts, seven leagues.
Oh, because one's a dynasty. Yes. That's right. All right. Yeah. I wish we could say we had that same amount of success with our spread picks last week. But
spread picks? I didn't make no spread picks last week.
Would you take money lines? Oh, you're just completely ignoring that you ever did that. Well, I took an anytime touchdown score, which looking back is the stupidest thing ever because you're not getting even odds with that. I took George Pickens. He was like plus 240. I'm like, yeah, Pickens is going to find the end zone. I'm all in on the Steelers team, blah, 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 blah. We know nothing going into week one, but guess what? It's a long season. And now we're going to take what we learned from week one, and we're not overreacting like we said. We're taking what we learned, we're going to apply that, and hopefully have a 4-0 collective week. I do have the first pick.
Yes, I had the first pick last week, so you have the first pick this week.
It is tough when you have the first pick, and you want to pick a team that you have some emotional connection to. But the Dolphins are going into Sunday Night Football in New England, absolutely rolling. And I think the defense is going to correct what was hurting them last week. And I think the offense is going to continue scoring at an absolutely dominant rate. And they're only 2.5-point favorites against a Bill Belichick team that has never, never beaten Tua Tagovailoa. So I'm taking the Dolphins minus 2.5. And that's my pick number one for this week.
Yeah, I like that pick. I mean, I would never take the Dolphins because I wouldn't do that to you. I give the Dolphins to you. But my game, my first pick, I love this game. And lines already moved. If you check points bet, It's actually at 7 now, plus 7. When I wrote this down originally, it was at plus 7.5. But that's not changing my pick. I'm still taking it. I'm taking the Minnesota Vikings on the road with Lincoln Financial Field against the Philadelphia Eagles, which if people remember last year, this exact same spot, week 2, Thursday Night Football, the Eagles.
It was Monday Night Football.
Yeah. Same, regardless.
Monday Night Kirk.
Monday Night, primetime, week 2. The Eagles absolutely blew the brakes off the Vikings. So as soon as that schedule came out, I guarantee you they got that game circled. And I don't care what you say about last week with Tampa Bay and going into Minnesota and beating them. That gives me an even better reason to take these Vikings to cover this point. Now, are they going to win the game straight up? No. But I think they're going to fight to the end. I think they're going to keep this thing close. And if we're talking about the Eagles, I mean, I don't want to put anything out there, but Bill Belichick, if you just kick that field goal on 4th and 3, even punt the ball on 4th and 17, that's a different game. Or you only need a field goal at the end there instead of a touchdown. And who knows, right? And I mean, shoulda, coulda, woulda. Doesn't matter at the end of the day. But I think this game is going to be a lot closer than the line suggests. I'm taking the Vikings plus 7, only at PointsBet, the best sports book you can find.
Wow. That one scared me just because that primetime Kirk. But 7 points is a lot, and I think 7 points is very reflective of the Vikings losing a game to the Bucs where they really stalled, had some unfortunate turnovers. So I don't mind it. We'll see how it plays out. For my final pick in this week's lock, once again, powered by our friends over at PointsBet, I'm going to take the Green Bay Packers. Yes, they're going on the road again in Atlanta. Another tough test for Jordan Love. A very good defense. But the Packers' defense isn't too shabby. And I know Jordan Love's getting all the headlines for the performance he had last week, but that Packers defense made it very, very difficult for Justin Fields, and I think they'll continue to do that for Desmond Ridder. The fact that they're, you know, only a 1.5-point favorite is intriguing, and I think for them to start 2-0 with two road wins with a young quarterback like Jordan Love would be everything Packers fans could have dreamed of. Talked a ton about the Falcons' deficiencies offensively. I just like the Packers in this one.
Yeah, you know, I like the Packers too, especially if they can sort of piggyback on what they did last week. My final pick of my 2-0 week, I already, like I said, look, I'm putting it out there. I'm going 2-0 this week. I know I said that last week, but again, that episode, I think it got lost or I don't remember saying it, but Pac claims I said it. So maybe I did. I don't know.
You could still be 1-1. There's nothing wrong with 1-1.
But the Denver Broncos -3.5. Give me Russell Wilson. He's back. I know they lost, but this is a team that's 56-13-2 all time in the first 2 weeks at home. Did you know that, Puck?
I know they're a great team. 56-13-2. They have that advantage with the altitude, you know, being there for camp and everything. Teams come in, it's tough.
And we're talking about a Washington team that struggled against what might be the worst team in the league. And they surely didn't make them look like the worst team in the league. So who knows? I'm gonna go with the Denver Broncos at home, -3.5. I know I'm going out there. It's risky. When you take the 3.5, it's very risky because you're giving up that sort of cushion, that so-called field goal. You know, those things that the kicker does, they put it in between the uprights. I know it's very rare nowadays. You don't see too many kickers.
That's true.
I'll put the ball through
Broncos
the uprights.
Broncos had a couple bad misses.
Right?
Yes.
So for me, I don't care about the field goal because, you know what? If I was up to it, I'm going for 2 every single time. But we'll save that for a different story. Broncos, -3.5, biggest lock. Next to Vikings plus 7.5. I'm going 2-0. I want to say Pac's going to go 1-1 just so I can beat him, but he's got some good picks too.
As long as the Dolphins one covers. That
knows?
Is the biggest.
I want to see us 1 week. I want to see us go 4-0.
We did that last year.
I know, multiple times.
Season. We were doing well.
But we got to do it again this year, right?
Yeah, we need to definitely get back on track. But there it is, the week 2 locks powered by our friends over at PointsBet. Make sure to check them out and use code BLITZ when signing up. But there you have it, another podcast in the books. The NFL is back. We are beyond pumped. Week 1 was great. We gave you our overreactions. We criticized people who do exactly what we just did. But overall, pretty fun episode, I'd say.
Yeah, we criticize people that obviously are really good at their job. Yeah. So it definitely feels a little bit hypocritical of us. But again, hey, look, that's the whole fun of it. We have fun doing it. You guys clearly have fun listening to it, even though if you don't necessarily agree with everything that we said. But yeah, that was awesome. I mean, another great episode. Thank you all for the support. The support's been awesome. I hope you guys had a fantastic week one. I hope your team won. And if it didn't win, I mean, look, 16 more weeks. I think that's like probably the 17th time we said it on the show. That there's only 16 more games.
17 more
16
weeks.
16 more games.
18 weeks now.
Yes.
Which is great because more football and more CTB shows. But we'll see you next week. Take care.